Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Hey guys, seriously, I'm so glad you're here. This is episode 74, and you are in for a treat. I finally synced up my schedule with my girl, Kristen McCall, to talk about her roller coaster story of a marriage and motherhood. So I wanted you to hear her story for several reasons. There's going to be several different types of ladies who listen to this. You're going to be probably fall into one of the categories. Number one, some of you are quite sure that getting married would solve all your problems. Please listen to Kristen as she shatters that myth. Number two, some of you are in marriages that are ending or have ended. It's just a statistical fact, right? It is such a deep devastation, and you may feel like it's over for you, like you don't have a future. I want you to hear the hope in Kristen's story. Now, I'm probably sure there's a third group of you ladies who kind of wish your marriages would end. Like, maybe you never said that out loud, but you've basically thought about it a lot. I want you to hear how very hard it can be to share custody of your precious little kiddos and how divorce is not the easy out that you may think that it is. There's a fourth group. Some of you are secretly pretty darn judgmental of divorced people. You just assume that divorced people are kind of messed up and they don't love God enough to stay married or something. They just didn't want to try anymore. I want you to hear how very hard Kristen fought for her marriage to stay intact. And then the fifth group of ladies that I think might be listening, you just are going to be called on to faithfully be a friend to someone whose life is being dismantled in a divorce. So I just want you to listen to Kristen's story so that you can have some idea of what it's like if you are ever in that very important role of a support person. Do you know, you guys, how I came up with all these perspectives? I have been each of these women at different points in my life. I once falsely believed that divorced people just didn't care enough about their marriage or they wouldn't have gotten divorced. And then as a divorced 20-year-old, I felt completely disqualified and hopeless that God would ever use me again. Neither of those things are true. So the facts, marriage isn't easy. Divorce isn't easy. Life in general is not easy. Kristen McCall today in our chat brings a good word though for each of us, regardless of which woman we are today. Let's go ahead and get started.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
Good. In my life, I've never tried this hard to get an interview with someone.
I'm really not that cool. Like, I'm just
You are
not.
Elusive. Maybe not cool, but definitely mysterious and elusive and busy.
Heaven help.
Oh, man. So...
I miss you.
I know. Where do you even live? I'm just realizing I don't even know what state you live in.
I live outside of Nashville in Franklin.
Of course you do.
So yeah, annoying. Like with all the other people.
Everybody.
Everyone in their life.
Did you move there to be ridiculously awesome or you were
No. There? I'm not that cool. I actually grew up here. So I've lived here my whole life, which no one does. Like everyone's like, you're from here? Like, That's yes, crazy. I actually grew up here.
Huh. Okay.
So I left and did college and then came back and have lived here forever.
Wow. Well, I wish that you lived in Dallas. So
I know. To think about.
Everybody cool is moving from Nashville to Dallas. Did you know that?
Really? I did not know that. Well, maybe yeah, I should do that.
It's about to start with you.
That's awesome. I'm pregnant again. Did you know that?
I don't think so. That's so cool.
Oh my gosh. All the things. Yeah. Too many babies, but it's going to be great.
Oh man. So were you trying to have?
Yes. And then we kind of like, we're like, oh crap. That means like a lot of things. We just kind of were like, yeah. And then we kind of didn't think through all the things. And then I had kind of a panic attack.
How far along are you?
I'm like 22 weeks.
Is that when you start telling people? Are you you're telling people?
Oh, yeah, for sure telling people. You can tell people after like 12 weeks. We kind of waited a little bit until we found out what we were having, which is a boy, which is really fun.
And you have a girl and a boy and a boy.
Yeah. Okay. So I have boy, girl, and now we'll have another boy.
Then you'll have a girl and you'll have four, two of each.
Gosh, I don't know. I don't know if we can do four. We'll see.
Will you tell the listeners, like, who are you really?
So I'm a blogger and I'm also like a blogging social media kind of guru person. So I work at Lifeway for one of their executives. Her name is Selma Wilson. Okay. So I basically run her whole blog, social media. She has a podcast that I co-host with her called Selma on Leadership.
Okay.
I blog at kristenmccall.com and yeah, so I love to do a lot of different things and I'm also a mom. So that's fun.
Okay, so how do you like podcasts? Seems like everybody in the world is doing a podcast.
I love it. Okay, so the podcast that I host is really fun. It's mostly leadership focused. So there's a lot of leadership at work, leadership in the home, leadership in church. So only some of that is like really kind of in my gifting. I feel like if I was doing your podcast where I was talking to moms all day, I'd be like, yes.
Okay.
I really relate to the marriage and family pieces of the podcast that I host and not a ton of the like corporate leadership because I just don't think it's in my DNA to like climb the corporate ladder
and wear like a tailored suit, high heels. Do people still wear pantyhose?
You know, supposedly they do. I have not. I've boycotted them since I was like in elementary school.
Yes. In seventh grade, I fell off of a pair of high heels and said, never again.
No more.
This shall stop now. Do you do the editing of your show?
I do not, but I do everything else.
It's a lot more work than people think it is.
It is a lot more work than people think it is.
I get asked all the time, like, can you do like two of these a week? I'm like, no. Thank you. I can hardly sometimes do one.
That's funny.
Okay. Something that your mom taught you was about making and keeping good friendships. And I wanted to talk about that because if I ever post something about loneliness or talk about that idea, women just, that just hits such a nerve with them. Women are lonely.
Yeah. It is lonely.
It is, and it can be, and we're afraid and all the things. So what did she teach you about making the friendships, but then keeping them for a long time is also seems to be a hard thing?
It is very hard. And I remember growing up, I mean, from the womb, I just remember she has two best friends that she's had since she was 15. She moved from Atlanta to Nashville right in the middle of high school. And these were like the two women that were actually really sweet to her. And they've been best friends for, oh my gosh, how many years is that now? Like 45 years plus. Mm. I mean, I just remember growing up, they were always around. They always called. They were always at all of our family functions. And then my mom was just incredible at like fostering new friendships, like making friends with my friends' moms. And she has the gift of hospitality. So growing up, we loved to boat and there's a lake in Nashville and we had houseboats growing up, which was really fun and different and unique. And literally every single weekend, we would have a different family from church or some of my friends and their family or whoever it was. And she was constantly inviting people. And she would probably tell you that she didn't get a whole lot of invitations back. And that was that was always pretty hard for her to like know that she was the one that was doing all of the initiation. But she still did it. I mean, until I was in college, they did that almost every weekend. So being around that of like building in community into your family life and your family rhythm. I mean, I just grew up with so many adult mentors and her friends were just so sweet to me. And so watching her do that was pretty incredible. I'm like, oh, okay, well, it takes work to be a friend. Like, you don't get to just sit back and be like, all the people are going to come to me because I'm awesome.
Yeah.
No, you have to like pour into people, even if sometimes they're not necessarily pouring back into you. So
And what do you think her motivation was?
You know, she became a believer later in life, like right around when I was born. And so I think some of it was, you know, the Christian gift of hospitality. And I think another piece of it, she's just super extroverted. Like, okay. She's very much like me. I think she just enjoyed having connection with people. So
do you now do that in your family?
Maybe not as well as she does, but...
Well, but she probably didn't think she did it that well either.
No, you know I'm sure she didn't. But yeah, I live in the same town where I grew up. So there's a group of us that still live here. And I have a handful of friends that I've been best friends with now for more than 15 years, like more than half my life, which is really, really neat to walk with people through all of the stages of their life.
Yeah.
And that absolutely has kind of been pared down through different like life trauma and crisis and situations. And, you know, my big giant list of friends has kind of pared itself down, but I definitely still have, you know, a handful of friends that I see all the time. And we have pictures from when we were 12 and it's really sweet.
Okay, so for a mom who just maybe moved to a new spot or she didn't grow up in the coolest city in the country like you, what would you encourage them to do when they're just feeling alone?
I think one of the easiest and hardest ways to get plugged in is to get plugged in at your local church. Sometimes that's really overwhelming because, like, we go to a pretty big church, but you can get plugged in. You just kind of have to be proactive. But, like, at our church, we have, like, a mom group and then... We have community groups or find like a MOPS group. I've done MOPS before. Mm-hmm. I think the stage of motherhood where it's like young kids is so lonely. And even I don't know about older kids. I'm sure it's lonely there too. But like just being a mom can be so draining and exhausting that for me, finding other mom friends that are kind of in the same season of life and in the trenches has been such a blessing because my best friend in the whole world just had a baby like 6 months ago. And so for the last like 3 years, she's just kind of known vicariously through me, like how hard it is. And but as soon as she had a kid, it was like our whole conversations took on such a different, you know, richness. And like, she's like, oh my gosh, this is what you've been talking about. I'm like, see, I tried to warn you. Like, So I just think someone wants to move to a new city. I think number one, you have to be courageous. It's not going to be easy.
Or fast.
But number two, just like put yourself out there. And if it doesn't work, you just have to keep doing it until you find the place where it feels right.
Yeah. I think so. We're too quick to say, well, I put myself out there two whole times and this place isn't for me. We've been in Dallas for 4 years and I'm just now starting to feel like I've got some people. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because even if you find them and you like them, it takes a while till they're like yours and you're theirs.
Gel.
And
yeah. You're like, you're my people.
Yeah. Okay. So you have such a lovely looking family. And it just seems as though it has just always been like that.
Oh, it's so perfect. Don't we look so cute?
I mean, flawless. So tell me about though when it wasn't quite so perfect. You've been married before. I've been married before too. And we kind of bonded over that when we first met. And
you have a crazy story. Me too.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's tricky because as Christians, we certainly don't ever want to glorify divorce at all, you know?
Yeah. No.
We're not an advocate of it, but sometimes it happens. And I know that for in my story, I felt so alone as a young Christian divorced woman who didn't get divorced for funsies or because, you know, the grass was greener on the other side or something.
Right.
So tell us about kind of your journey from that to where you are today.
Yeah. So I dated this guy in college in my freshman year, and then we got engaged the summer before my senior year, and he was a couple years older than I was, and we got married right after I graduated from college. So I was like baby bride, right? Like I think I had just turned 22. So I was like itty bitty, and I was like, this is going to be magical. And I think I had read every Christian book on the shelf about...
So you kissed dating goodbye.
Oh, yeah. I kissed dating goodbye. I didn't really, though. I think that book's kind of whack. But...
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to say.
I can't say anything about it. I at least read it. I didn't quite agree with it. I did all the marriage books. Like, I read Boundaries in Marriage before I got married. I mean, I did like all the things. Mm-hmm. I didn't know I was being super legalistic, but I was. Like, I was trying to check all the boxes.
Well, you want it to go well, right?
Right, right. I was like, I'm a firstborn, so I'm not really type A. Like, I'm not organized necessarily, but I'm very like, let's follow the rules.
Okay.
So I tried to, you know, set us up for success and like all those things. And it wasn't a terrible marriage and it wasn't a great marriage.
Okay.
It was somewhere in the middle on the bell-shaped curve. And like about a year and a half in, I kind of started going, surely this can be better, right?
Okay.
We went to counseling for a while and then we stopped going to counseling and then kind of life got crazy. And then before I knew it, I woke up and we were miles apart.
How long was that?
More than 2 years in. So a little after 2 years in, ish just kind of hit the fan and we woke up and I felt really, really far and really distant from him. And then he said, I want to go back to counseling. And I said, great. So we go back to counseling and that first time he like dropped a bomb in our marriage and told me some things that I didn't know. And from that point, it was like a roller coaster that I couldn't get off for like 3 years.
Was he going to counseling to tell you the news, tell you he wanted to be out?
Find the butcher knife and kill him in
our kitchen. So safety first for him.
Safety first.
Okay.
I can be a little bit hostile. No, I'm just kidding. So yeah, so I think he was trying to like hedge his bets and we had a conversation with the counselor, which was probably wise. And from that point on, I mean, we were in major I like hit my knees. I've been a believer my whole life. I've loved Jesus from the felt board and the apple juice and vanilla wafers, but it totally took on a whole new level of intimacy and realness that I've never had before. So I kind of like circled the wagons. I kind of got those awesome best friends I was telling you about. I mean, I told everybody everything and I said, I really need y'all to be praying. And then for the next almost 3 years, people just joined me in prayer and we prayed for reconciliation. We prayed for protection of our marriage. I mean, we prayed for healing. I mean, we prayed for all the things.
Where is he at in this? Is he trying to end the marriage or is he?
It depends on what day that you ask. That was the hardest part was there would be some counseling sessions where we would show up and he'd be like, I really want this to work. And then there'd be other counseling sessions where he's like, oh, this is just too hard.
Okay.
This is not working. Like, we just need to get a divorce. And I just kept being like super bullheaded. I was not going to take divorce lying down.
Okay.
It was a really exhausting, long, emotionally like strung out period. We separated, I think, 2-3 times, like move all of your stuff out, separate it. And then we'd get back together and we'd have these like beautiful redemption moments and we'd be like, oh, we're getting back together. And then we would do it 2 more times.
Mm.
It was just very exhausting. So all that to say, we get to the end. I didn't know it was the end. We like started this whole new chapter of our marriage. We called it our new marriage. We call it our new beginning. We buy this huge house and...
Because that'll fix it, right?
Right. It sure will. Did you know that buying a house fixes things?
And babies.
And babies. Babies fix things too, but we're not there yet. So the paint had not literally dried on the wall. I mean, I think we had been there 4 weeks and I came home from church one day and he said, you know, it's just not working. Like, I'm just done. And at that point, the Lord and I had wrestled enough that I felt a peace about it. I was like, okay, that's your decision. I don't agree with that decision. That is not the path I want to take. But one person can't make a marriage. Two people have to agree to get married. And only one person has to say they want a divorce for a marriage to end. So I had a lot of grief, kind of went into a tailspin, didn't really know what I was doing for several weeks. I mean, I was just kind of walking around like a zombie. So our big brand new house that we had just bought and redone and painted and all that stuff, I went and I just said, you know, like, I don't have the energy to like put this back on the market. Like, you can stay here. I'm going to move in with my parents because they live in town. Mm-hmm. So I went home and packed up all my stuff. And as I was packing, I felt so sick. Like, I was like, what in the world? Felt nauseous. And I laid down and it was like one of those moments. It's like in a Lifetime TV drama where you're like, dun, dun, dun. And I like thought about it and I was like, oh my gosh. Oh my God. I'm totally pregnant.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like that realization, like, I don't remember when my last period was, like, holy crap.
Shit.
And so I literally went to Walgreens and bought like 4 pregnancy tests. And I didn't even call my husband first. I called my best friend that's a nurse. And I go, how accurate are pregnancy tests?
They're always wrong, right?
And she like said some expletives and she was like, no. And I was like, yes, ma'am. And she was like, well, I would take 2 more, but they're really accurate. So like that whole night, she was the only person that knew. And I just literally was like unpacking stuff at my parents' house because we were getting a divorce. All I could think was like, oh my gosh, like I'm going to be a single mom, like from the get-go.
Did you think maybe that would... maybe he would want to stay together if you told him that?
Yeah, and we did. We did a whole other round of trying to make it work. We went back to that same counselor. I mean, it's just part of the roller coaster. Okay. And but so he had already made his decision and okay. We did try, but it was really obvious that like trying was a lot more on my side than his side.
How did that settle with you as a person? Like you, this is like the biggest relationship of your life.
Yeah.
And he is saying he don't want to play anymore.
I think the hardest thing for me is I'm a big dreamer. So we had, you know, like our 5-year plan and our 10-year plan. And when we retire, we're going to do XYZ. And when all of that hits the fan, I mean, you literally sit there and go, oh my God, like, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Not only do I not have goals, everything's going to change in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just single. Like, you are single in the midst of this marriage culture. I mean, it just rocked me to my core because I realized that I had built a lot of my hope and trust in marriage working out and not necessarily on the person of Jesus. And all of that was completely stripped away.
Yeah. So then what happened?
So we did like a whole nother round of like trying to make it work, whatever. So then my son was born.
Whatever.
It did not work. So finally, by the time I was in my last trimester, my health was kind of declining. And I was so stressed that I couldn't even enjoy my first pregnancy. I couldn't, like, I was not having the typical, like, oh my gosh, you're pregnant. Let's talk about it. There were none of the happy, joyful experiences. Yeah. Like when I told people I was pregnant, people cursed at me and were like, oh, S, like, oh my gosh.
Dang.
I'm like, yeah, like there was no,
that's a heartbreak. You never think it's going to go like that.
No, you never want to be like, tell people you're pregnant and then be like, oh my gosh.
I'm so sorry.
I'm so sorry. Like that was the most typical response. So finally, by the time we got to my third trimester, he said he was done for real. And I said I was done for real. So we stopped talking until our son was born.
Was he there?
Yeah, he was. He was not in the labor room with me when I was going through labor.
Okay.
But it ended up that I needed a emergency C-section. And I had told him ahead of time, like, out of respect for you as a dad, if I have to have a C-section, you can come back. If I had to do it over again, I don't know if I would do that. But
okay,
he ended up being there when our son was born and got to hold him. And we knew we were getting a divorce. Like, he had already done all of his divorce paperwork and kind of wanted me to do it before our son Jacob was born. And I was just like, you know, I need to focus on being healthy. And I had preeclampsia. And it was like,
oh, wow. Yeah, that's serious.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm just going to focus on staying alive and keeping our baby alive.
It's a good plan.
Yeah. So it was a good plan. So he was born. And about a month after he was born, I went back to my lawyer and I said, okay, like, what do we need to do? And we figured out a plan. We did mediation. We came up with a parenting plan. And our divorce was final when Jacob was like 7 weeks old.
What was that day like?
You know, the mediation day was really hard. I didn't know what to expect. I do not have divorce at all in my family history. Like, my parents are still together. My grandparents were married their whole lives. None of my aunts and uncles really, except for one, are divorced. Like, I just had no way to know what to expect. Mm-hmm. And so it's just bizarre when you're negotiating holidays and schedules.
Yeah.
And it was very hard for me. I mean, I was a brand new mom. Like, I literally, this is the craziest memory. I literally had to like tell my lawyer I had to pump in between our mediation, like back and forth. And thankfully she was a woman. So I was like, hey, you can stay here, but like the man lawyer needs to leave because I just whipped my titties out.
Out of here, man lawyer.
Oh my gosh. Like pump in the middle of this legal like conference room.
So weird. So
it was like the weirdest new mom experience ever.
I remember on the day of my divorce, the guy asked the judge, the guy, the judge guy, said, like, what's, you know, state your name. And I was so broken. I could not stop crying enough to say my name.
Yeah. So thankfully, we just did mediation and came up with a plan that was acceptable. And then I didn't even have to go to court. He had to go to court.
Okay.
But my lawyer, like, went on my behalf. So I didn't even have to step into a courtroom, which was very nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, mediation was done and we kind of came to a plan. It was very hard though to like look ahead. And I mean, I was a mom of like 7 weeks. I didn't know how to plan for when he's 2 years old or five years old or 10 years old. So that was difficult to navigate. But after that, I went and got ice cream and I went home. And then within a week of mediation, our divorce was final and a judge signed off on it. And I think on that day, I felt it was bizarre because like I didn't know it had happened. And I just got like a PDF from my lawyer that was like, it's done. And there was like a stamp on it of approval and a judge had signed it. And it was a very like freeing experience. The weight of everything that I've walked through over the last 3 years is like pretty much done.
Mm-hmm.
There was a total brokenness of everything that I had hoped for, even up until the end. I was still hopeful that at some point we could figure out how to make it work.
So what's your relationship with God like at that point? Because Romans 8:28, he really can turn anything around, but it certainly is not looking like he did it at that point.
No.
Or in the way like you thought.
Right. Thankfully, I've had a faith that somehow was strong enough to withstand all of these things. My faith really grew and I had people that were pouring into me. I mean, I had incredible mentors. Like I had an older friend that was a single mom at one point too. And so she was able to kind of walk me through some of the stuff I had never thought about or never thought I would think about.
Mm-hmm.
I really just tried to cling to the Lord and, oh, hello, my counselor. Like I was on a weekly, like,
yeah.
Hey, and then I'm on like every week. I'll see you here. And then I had a best friend that I told that I was pregnant. She literally called me, I think, every single day of my pregnancy. And we were not living in the same city. And so she would call and be like, hi, just checking in, like literally every day. Like, I think she was like, I want to make sure you're alive. I want to make sure you're okay. Like,
that's so good.
Yeah. So I had people that were super intentional and I was living with my parents still. And so I had a built-in network of people who would feed me and make sure that I was eating and I was still going to work and working full time. So I had a boss I was actually working at a Christian university. So my boss loved Jesus and was super gracious with me and would let me take naps under my desk and wouldn't tell anybody.
That's so nice.
Nice. So I just had a really gracious community that supported me.
Okay. When I got remarried, it was several years later. I was not looking to get remarried. In my situation, there was abuse and I was just glad to be safe. So I wasn't trying to get back into that again. But when I did get remarried, I think when I left this abusive situation, my first marriage, it was easy for me to say, that's 100% him. That's crazy town. And I am just the victim and poor me and whatever. And not that, you know, obviously nobody should be abused. That's not what I'm saying. But when I got remarried and some of the same, none of the abuse, but some of the same conflicts were happening. And I was the only common denominator. I could not help but say, maybe I had a couple percentage points of of part in that. So, and again, not the abuse, but the, you know, I can be disrespectful. I can be really kind of a jerk and I run my mouth a lot. And so what has remarriage been like? Because I'll just, spoiler alert, you're remarried.
This is hilarious. So you're like, what is this, mom struggling? Well, so you're getting the real raw, you're getting the real raw version at this point. So we just celebrated. I got remarried pretty quickly. Was not expecting that. But I got remarried a year after our divorce was final.
Okay.
Which some people were like, whoa, and other people were like, I'm really excited for you. But we dated for not very long at all, and he knew what he was looking for, and I knew what I was looking for, and I had the list of all the things I didn't want, and he wasn't those. And so he loved Jesus, and I was like, let's do the thing.
Your list is so different the second time around, right?
Oh, heaven help, yes.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Yeah. Lots.
I basically went opposite day and I got the best husband I've ever
That's awesome. So we just celebrated our 2-year anniversary. Okay. And so the real raw version is I kind of like had a little meltdown at our 2-year anniversary because okay. I was like, oh my gosh, 2 years, like 2 years is when my other marriage hit the fan. Like, what are we doing? This is not going well. And my amazing sweet husband was like, hi, I'm not the same person as your ex-husband. This is a lot better than your other marriage. Yeah. And you need to take a chill pill. But for sure, there's obviously a lot of similarities. And some of our fights are the same because I'm the same person.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know me, which is 99% of you, I am not the most organized, neat and tidy, cleanly homemaker. Like that is just not in my gifting. I'm really creative. I'm very right brain. I get a lot of things done. And if it's a project, like I get it done for work, but like keeping the house tidy is even before kids was not my gifting. Mm-hmm. And now that I have 2 little toddlers like running around making everything more messy, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's just like exponentially more difficult. And
do you work?
And I work, right? Like from home. So like I'm here a lot trying to like do work. And it's just a giant cluster most days. But my husband now is like super OCD and he's very tidy and he's very neat. And in his brain and in his world, everything has a place. Mm-hmm. The scissors go here, obviously, every time. And I am not like that. Like, that is just not how my
Our scissors are free, sweetie.
Scissors are free. They have so much freedom. So, like, our biggest fight to date, always, forever and ever, amen, is just keeping the house, quote, organized and tidy. Like, mm-hmm. so I have to work really hard to keep our house clean and as clean as possible and just try to keep things organized. That's also a struggle that I had in my other marriage. Mm-hmm. Either I'm just like the messiest person ever, or everybody else is just way more clean than me. So I think everybody's cleaner than me, which is fine. I can accept that.
Or you just like really tidy guys.
Or I apparently like tidy guys. People that are OCD. So I don't know.
What has it been like to share custody with your ex-husband?
Heaven help.
Not great.
It has been really hard.
Okay.
It's not an easy thing to feel like you're sharing and actually be sharing your kid. It is not fun. My ex and I are going to have a longer co-parenting relationship than we even had a marriage. So when I realize that and go, okay, we have 18 years of this. We're only 3.5 years in. It's going to be a longer stretch on this side of it. It has been heartbreaking. It has been, just real hard. It's hardest dealing with my ex, like co-parenting or coming to decisions. Uh-huh. But mostly it's just hard not seeing your kid all the time.
Yeah.
Literally being like, okay, which weekends can we decide to go to the pumpkin patch? Because every other weekend he's gone. Or like, which holidays are we going to be with which families? Because he's not with us every Christmas morning. It's only every other Christmas morning.
That would be really hard. How do you... Okay, so now... You told me that you are expecting your third.
I am, crazy person.
So there's going to be one kiddo who is just not always there and 2 that are.
Yeah.
What does that conversation look like?
You know, I think it'll be interesting. Maggie, my daughter, is just turned 1. So she's just now sort of aware. Like she flips out and gets so excited when he comes home and they get so excited to see each other. And honestly, like the reason we're having another, I never really thought of myself as like a large family, and anything above 2 to me is large. So like, oh my gosh, we're going to have 3 kids. But really Jacob's gone every other weekend and we didn't want Maggie to feel like an only child every other weekend.
Okay.
So it was kind of like a weird conversation. Like we want 2 of our own and we don't want any of our kids to feel like alone. And so here I am. I am pregnant again.
Okay.
So growing up, them growing up, I think that'll be an interesting, why does brother go every other weekend? And is that going to happen to me? And like, I'm sure all of those things are going to come up.
What do you do to make it healthy for for your son?
Yeah. So it's been an interesting process. Like for him, he's done it since he was born, literally. Like we had a certain parenting plan until he was 6 months old. And then starting at 6 months old, he started doing overnights. So literally he's had two houses his entire life.
Okay.
So for him, that's normal. I don't even think he understands necessarily that a lot of his friends don't do that. Like, I don't think he even gets that most people have one house.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us are remarried. So he has mom, dad, stepmom, and stepdad. So he has four parents and four sets of grandparents and more cousins than I can even keep track of. And he has so many people that pour into him and love him and adore him. So for that, I'm really thankful. Like he has no shortage of love in his life, but it's confusing sometimes. Like he'll say mommy and daddy, and I know he's not talking about me. He calls his stepmom mom. And
how do you handle that?
Not well sometimes. I mean, that's the struggling well part, right? Like, I mean, sometimes I just have to take a minute, like, okay, like this is his life. He has an entire other life that I don't really know about because he's not talking a ton yet. And we don't really communicate. I mean, I don't tell my ex about a ton of stuff and he doesn't tell me, and we don't have to, like we're not required to. So yeah, it's a very weird feeling that the son that you love and your firstborn, you only know 60-something% of his life.
That is really weird. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a huge chunk of things that I don't know. Like he recently he started talking about his friend Jordan, and I didn't know who he was talking about. You know, I had to text my ex and be like, who's this Jordan kid he's talking about? Stuff like that where I'm just completely out of the loop.
Do you ever worry about what's going on there since you don't know what it is? Like I get really nervous and I would be creating terrible situations in my mind.
There was a period of time when Jacob was like baby and things were really not well between my ex and I where I would. But this is not of me. So this is like totally the Lord. The first time he left me, I remember watching them drive off. And I remember the Lord, like not audibly, but like kind of whisper to me, this is the beginning. Like you have a choice every single time he goes to trust me that like I'm his dad and I'm a good dad, or to completely be in a tailspin of anxiousness and fear.
Yeah.
And it is a conscious choice every single time. And for the first 2 years of his life, for sure, I prayed over him like audibly out loud. And now I just kind of sit there and I'll be like, can mommy pray for you? And sometimes he'll let me and sometimes he won't. And if he won't, I'll just hold his hand and pray for him, not out loud. But I literally pray every time he leaves. Like I pray protection over him. I pray for the Lord to like minister to my heart while he's gone, because it just stinks. It's no fun. It's hard.
Yeah.
And I pray for the strength to just have faith that if anything bad should happen, like that I would trust the Lord and like just trust God, like with my kid. You have to do that if they're going to kindergarten, or you have to do that if they're going to your ex-husband's house.
You're so right.
It's a lot different for me because I've just learned how not to be a helicopter parent. Like I don't have that luxury in my son's life because I don't know. I'm not in control, you know, 30-something percent of the time, and I have no idea. But it is. It's sort of terrifying. And also, you just kind of have to choose to trust the Lord, and it's not always easy. Oh, it's not always easy. But in the end, like I've experienced such peace about that. And, you know, we'll FaceTime now that he's old enough. We'll FaceTime and stuff when he's over there. And, you know, I get to talk to him some, and, you know, that's not always ideal, but it, you know, it works. And
it's something.
It's something. It's better than nothing. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited about just the new marriage that God has brought, and the new babies and the family.
It's fun. It is a sweet taste of like redemption and like just seeing the Lord do new things out of such brokenness and just heartbreak. It's been really fun. And, you know, you're living it, so you kind of don't always feel that way. But when I step back and I think about it or have conversations like this, I'm like, oh man, the Lord has brought me so far and done such a mighty work in our family and in my life. It's been really sweet.
Yeah. Okay. So for a mom who, or just a woman in general, who's facing a divorce that she doesn't seem to think she can stop, even though she'd love to. I know for me, I think I was 22 as well. I honestly don't remember. Maybe I got divorced when I was 23. I can't remember. I was married for 4 months. were long ones. So I remember, though, in my mind, having a vision of like train tracks that just stopped. I am 23 and it's over. There did not seem like there was going to be a future.
Yeah.
So what would you encourage to a mom who's like, hold it, this is my train tracks have stopped.
Yeah.
What now?
It is going to sound like super Sunday school-y, but like hit your knees as much as you possibly can.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen the movie War Room, it's awesome.
Yes.
There's a teensy bit of like Christian cheesiness because it's a faith-based film, but it's a lot better than they used to be. And it just talks about the power of prayer. And I did not have a powerful prayer life before I walked through our marriage trials and subsequent divorce. Like I just, you know, I prayed every once in a while and I wrote things in my journal and I told people I prayed for them, but I never had a like, I am earnestly praying for things. Mm-hmm. So I would say pray to the Lord, scour your Bible, especially the Psalms. Whew.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a lot of feelings. I have big feelings. And sometimes I'm like, is that okay? And one of my counselors was like, just go read the Psalms and you'll feel totally fine. And I'm like, that's true.
Absolutely.
David just pours out his heart to the Lord, and don't be afraid to pour out your heart. And so like number one, read the Bible and just pray super earnestly for direction, for wisdom, how to handle the situation, for wise counsel. And then I would also say, get your support people, like gather your support people. You're going to need friends. You're going to need your parents. If you have a good relationship with your parents, you're going to need people to help watch your kids. And the other thing, this is going to sound a little weird, but like get a good lawyer. My lawyer is amazing. He charges me an arm and a leg, and that's fine. I give it to him. But I interviewed, I think, 2 or 3 different lawyers, and I really felt the Lord whisper, like, this is who you're supposed to be with.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It was a really, really hard time. Like, the first time I met with him, it was crazy. So the first ultrasound I ever had, I was, I think, 8 or 9 weeks pregnant, and I also had my first meeting with him, my lawyer, on that same day. Man. Like, not many people like go hang out with divorce lawyers and their OBs at the same day.
No.
So I was like a freaking hormonal wreck.
I hope you got ice cream after that day too.
Because, oh my gosh. I think I did. Or Sonic or Starbucks or something. Like there was definitely some treat involved. Man. But I just remember feeling like, okay, this is the person. Like I feel like he's going to be my on the ground advocate. You know, I have my Holy Spirit advocate that's advocating for me. But he is my legal advocate. And as much as you can, I heard really wise counsel from my boss at the time, who's a social worker or used to be in social work. And she said, you need to take care of yourself. Do whatever you need to do and let your lawyer worry about the legal stuff.
Okay.
That is not your job to like check in and make sure everything's going okay. Like he'll call you if he needs something. Mm-hmm. And if you have questions, you ask him. But like,
you stay in your lane.
Yeah. Stay in your lane. Like you do what you need to do to get through the day. I think those would be my main takeaways.
Okay. I never would have thought about the lawyer one. It's so good. Yep.
And it's so important.
Okay. So we're almost out of time, but what is something you just can't stop talking about? You need everyone to know about it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I don't know. I'm sure all of you have. If you've heard of Brené Brown, she's like one of my favorite authors in the world. Yes. I love her. And one day we're going to be best friends, but we're not yet. So
hey, just hold out hope.
I read all of her books instead.
What's your very favorite one that you've read?
Oh man. I'm doing Rising Strong right now. Like I'm at the end of it. And it's amazing. And I don't know if I can pick between Daring Greatly and Rising Strong, but they kind of go hand in hand. So,
because I've read Rising Strong and my husband and I literally tell each other, well, the story I'm telling myself.
I know.
It is such a good way to start a conversation.
It really is. I need to remember that way more because it's so good. So yeah. So the summer after the bomb went off in our marriage, my counselor had like a group counseling kind of session. And we went through, now I'm not going to remember the name of the book, but we went through one of Brené Brown's books, and it was the one on shame. And hold on, I thought it was just me, but it isn't.
Okay.
And it's all on like shame and working through shame and shame resilience. Okay. And she talks about that in some of her other books, but this was like exclusively on that. So we had a group counseling session that was, I think, 12 or 14 weeks, and we went through all the curriculum. And so I kind of feel like, oh my gosh, I love Brené Brown. I've loved her for years. She's amazing. And like, I feel like each book is just better than the last.
Okay.
If you want a little intro and you haven't heard of her before, she did a TED Talk, which is how she got like uber famous.
Yes.
And it was shared like millions of times, even like within 24 hours of her doing it. So I love Brené Brown. I love me some books, and yes, she's my favorite.
Yes, me too. I'm such a fan of her writing style, because it's, you know, you can understand it. It's not like too confusing and hard to, because I wish I loved reading. I know I should love reading. I'm a homeschool mom. I think we're supposed to love reading.
Yeah, I love reading.
It's so good.
So good.
All right. Well, Kristen, we are out of time.
Yes.
So thankful for your honesty and sharing your story, because a lot of people have that story statistically, but
right,
we don't super want to talk about it.
Right.
So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. I'm a uber big fan of your podcast, and I listen to everyone.
You're kidding me. Thank you so much.
No. I love them. Oh, girl. I love them.
Yay. Thanks.
Yay. Well, thank you.
All right. You have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Wow. Right. Gosh, so much there. It's so hard. It's a heavy topic we don't like to talk about, because I think sometimes we just don't really know how to talk about it. There's so much that goes into it. I think it's really important to realize that every single divorce situation is different, and we need to not assume we know things that we don't know, because I know I used to do the same thing. So what will your strategy be to struggle well this week? Maybe the idea of Kristen saying that her mother taught her how to make and keep good friends. Maybe that really was something that you wish that you knew how to do. You feel lonely. It seems hard. Maybe you're somebody who tends to kind of burn through the friends. You're always really quick to find something wrong with everybody, and you don't keep a friend for super long. I would really challenge you to have a really honest look at the common denominator. And I mean this just as gently as possible, but if everybody else around you is the one with the problem, that may not be true. So because I super want you to have the relationships that God created us for, I would encourage you to really have a look at that. Have a look at yourself and ask God, what do you do that is contributing to the destruction of all these relationships? Like they say in recovery groups, you need to clean up your side of the street. And if you just are standing in a pile of trash, pointing across the street at everybody else's problems, it's not going to go that well for your relationship. So just something to consider. Maybe your strategy to struggle well this week would be to find some friends and put yourself out there. Go to one of those MOPS groups, which is Mothers of Preschoolers, and meet some women who are in your same life stage. Or maybe your kiddos are older. Find a church. Find a place where you can find some women and start making some relationships. I wanted to just quick outline kind of how our community group does it at our church, just because sometimes the practicality, it's kind of can be confusing and it feels hard. And so just, it's very simple. We meet at the same house every week. It's my house, which you gotta make sure the person's fine with that, which I'm fine with it, because it makes me clean my house, kind of. Don't ask my community group, that will tell you that I don't clean my house, because I kind of sometimes don't. But you just need a place. Everybody brings their own food for their own family, and we bring $15 to pay a high schooler to not run out of the house screaming, but stay in the house and watch our kids. So that is what we do. It's about 2 hours long, and it's every 2 weeks, and it's four couples and a bajillion kids. It just doesn't have to be complicated or fancy. So I just thought I'd kind of outline what that looks like in case you feel like you'd like to start something, but you didn't know how. It's super simple. So marriage is hard. You just have to be married for a couple minutes to realize that. Maybe this week, your strategy to struggle well, if you're a married lady, you can ask God, what is one thing that you can do to love your husband better this week? For me, I immediately knew it's listening. I don't listen to him that well. I am very happy to be listened to, but when he starts talking about things, especially things I don't understand, like his job, I don't know what he's even I don't even understand the words he's saying. So I tune out real quick, or I get real busy, and that's just not acceptable. It's disrespectful. It's so rude. I'm just mad at myself right now about that. So that is my strategy to struggle well this week, is to listen to my precious, precious husband when he talks about telecommunication jargon. Maybe you are divorced already and you do share custody, and your strategy to struggle well this week would be to do what Kristen said and choose to trust that God can handle being a good father to your kids. So guys, I am currently currently sitting in my hotel room at the IF gathering, having just had the most spectacular weekend of sitting under some teaching that was all the kinds of phenomenal. And I just wanted to share something that Jill Briscoe said. Look her up, read everything she writes. She's amazing. But as we talk about family and divorce and kids, and it's just the people in front of our faces are the hardest ones to love because you know all their junk and they know yours. But she said some things that I want to share with you. She just said that wherever your feet are, that's your mission field. If you don't think you know enough about Jesus, just share the little bit that you know. You don't have to know more than you already know. And then she said three sentences that I loved. Go where you're sent, stay where you're put, give what you've got. I'll say it again. This week, go where you're sent, but then stay where you're put and give everything you've got. I am praying for you. I am thankful for you. Keep fighting this very good fight and know that we are battling on the winning side. I love that. Have a great week of struggling well.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.